Hey all, Matt Donald here. So rather than tell you specifically what we're going to talk about this month on the Paleobites Patreon at patreon.com/MatthewDonald, which I don't know, it's going to be some Jurassic Park property or some crap. I don't know. I thought instead the best way to advertise this is by playing a clip of last month's episode where I talk about the fever dream that is the Dinoverse books by Scott Simpson. So roll the tape! And then she murmurs the line specifically to the GK Acrocanthosaurus. Again, I cannot stress this enough. A normal-ass Acrocanthosaurus. So kiss me already. I've only been waiting 100 million years. What the hell are these books? She falls in love with a normal-ass Acrocanthosaurus. I'm so angry and mad about this that I'm mixing up these dinosaurs. And I'm a dinosaur nerd. I never do that. She falls in love with an Acrocanthosaurus and then only agrees to get together with the human that's interested in her when this human is merged with the psyche of that normal-ass Acrocanthosaurus. These books are insane! Anyways.
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast that, like miners digging for fossils, is boring. My name's Matthew Donald. Each week, I and a rotating series of guest co-hosts talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week, I'm joined by someone who has returned. His last time on the show was episode, I think it was 26, Perusaurus. And we're once more talking about P.S. Wait, that sounds really bad.
That sounds very bad. Shame on you.
It's Alan Brooks. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm kind of excited to talk about our topic for today.
Yes, yes,
indeed. Do you want to introduce that?
Yes, well, actually, first, because it's been a while, so you're forgiven for forgetting how the show works. Because, like, just to pad out the episode a little bit, I often like to start with some sort of little dinosaur-related question or something to kind of... and then since you've been on the show last, we've gotten really into Dungeons & Dragons, so... So you are a DM, and that's you often are a dungeon master.
Yeah, I'm a dungeon master most of the time because I'm kind of the big passionate one, and it's a time sink I can sink my time into to create everything that goes on in the backlog. Players have it easy. They just say, "I just remember what happened last week and show up with my dice and react."
See, the thing is, I sometimes barely even remember what happened last week. So when I play.
Yeah.
Life's
busy.
Yeah, no, it is. It's fine. And to be fair, I think we do some stuff. We role play, you know, like it's not just all up to you. I mean,
role play, you shoot things.
Yes, yes, indeed. Here's the dinosaur way question I'm going to ask you. If you could throw in some Pachycetus into, which is the animal we're going to talk about, into your next like one-shot campaign, how would you incorporate them?
I'd probably have to include them as something you would have to look for. Oh, gosh, that's actually a hard question.
I was thinking it could be an enemy, but, like, since we think it might have been semi-aquatic, potentially, maybe mostly land, but obviously on the water, maybe it could be an enemy that could swim and walk on land?
Yeah, because I'll be honest, one of the things that most D&D characters aren't really good at is underwater combat, because underwater combat just makes everything so much more complicated and harder for everyone. Like, try and shoot someone with a ranged weapon underwater, good luck. Basically, gets turned into harder to hit, let's just say, to avoid the thing. But yeah, it would be fun, especially if we did it similar to another appearance of something of very similar, the Ambulocetus, using it as a kind of crocodile analog.
Right. But now certain spells I have, would they work on water? Like, obviously, bonfire wouldn't, which is one of the spells my mage uses, my wizard uses.
Work. The problem is, when you're submerged in water, you take half damage from fire spells, which is actually a little odd because
You feel like it'd be zero damage from fire spells.
Well, it would depend, really. It's like, how big is the fire spell? I mean, if we try to get into this, the very engineering or scientific engineering, science and physics sort of thing, water actually makes a heat scarier because air is actually crappy conductor of heat, whereas water's really good. So it's either if you have an inner large body, the heat just dissipates because water also conducts and stores heat really well. But if it's say you're in a hut in a tub and you cast bonfire underneath it, after a few rounds, they could realistically be taking more damage. I've actually gotten a steam burn myself, which is ouch. Wow.
Well, I know there was the movie Dante's Peak, which there was a volcano erupting, and there was a part where this couple that was bathing in a hot spring suddenly died because the lava started appearing in the hot spring, which I don't know how scientifically accurate that is.
Actually, I think what happened was because basically volcanoes are not just molten rock. They're also lots of rather fun and, or shall we say, very scary chemicals. And my thought was that the pools had turned acidic enough that they I don't know what it's called when you die from acid, but basically they got killed by acid.
Acidification, kind of, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah,
basically got acided to death.
Well,
it's a niche enough thing that no one really has a name
for.
No one
wants
to die that
way.
I bet you there's a scientist with it.
So certainly not our Pachycetus when you're casting fire spells onto them.
No.
So now let's get into the science part of Pachycetus, the actual discussion of the show. it means Pakistani whale, because it's from Pakistan. Type, it is a cetacean, a group of artiodactyl mammals that include dolphins and whales. Yes, this thing, despite fitting the anatomical and skeletal definition of a cetacean, was a wolf-like land animal. So,
do we have any idea of how aquatic it was? That kind of family eventually became the cetaceans, where most whales nowadays, you take them out of the water and put them on the land, they're just going to die, suffocate.
Well, apparently there was an idea that sometimes it might be semi-aquatic, or maybe it'd be like a tapir or something. There was a study in 2009 that was indicated that they could stand in water almost totally immersed without losing visual contact of air, because the limb bones of them are osteosclerotic, which is which means they're basically very dense. The bones are very dense, which is good for if you're trying to be submerged.
Okay, because it actually talks about, I was looking over on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I was looking on Wikipedia,
too. It says that they
have
a close relation to hippos, which do the exact same thing, which is why, despite the fact that hippos, realistically, you look at a hippo, hippos should not be able to swim, but because they are so
They don't really swim, to be fair. They mainly sink.
They're more accurate to say they are running on the bottom of the river.
Do you want to hear I think I've said this on the show before. Do you want to hear a really scary fact about hippos? They're not fat. That's all muscle. They have that.
Yeah.
They're bulletproof. So from that.
Yeah. If I was trying to defend myself from a hippo, I'd like a 50 cal, please, or something big.
I'd like a grenade, which it would bite me, so I'd still die, but I'd take it with me. Maybe.
Or maybe just climb a tree. For all their bulk, they're
not.
Well,
I know.
They
could just knock the tree down.
Get that big tree then. But okay. Enough hippos.
It's a boba. Anyways,
Pachycetus.
Yes, Pachycetus. Thank you for trying to keep it on track. The hippos are actually the most closely related to whales of any of the other even-toed ungulates. Because, it's weird. The even-toed ungulates, the artiodactyls, they do still include whales and dolphins, which is weird to me. It's a very weird inclusion. You got deer, bison, giraffes, camels, pigs. Then suddenly you have whales.
Question. So you mentioned something about living like a tapir. What does that mean for the Pachycetus?
Well, it could have it's a kind of a different thing, because tapirs are frugivores and herbivorous, but this would be a predator. So probably use the water as a form of stealth. Maybe not necessarily swimming, but maybe swimming a little bit, but mainly just use it as cover to kill, or to get fish and other sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So
their diet, fish, mammals.
Well, and also they, Yes. Sorry. Continuing the.
Well, it's more like a question. What do you think they mostly did? Were they starting to go into the fish area, or was it still mostly kind of their wolf-like eating? Because one thing I'm looking at, this sucker's got a long head.
Well, and also it's got eyes on the top of the head, which is a very common adaptation for semi-aquatic.
Yeah.
Sort of like a crocodile, yeah.
So maybe it was more like kind of this... Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like a mammal was dipping into way too many ideas at the time. It's like, I'll take a little bit of this crocodile.
That's one way to put it. It was,
dense bones from who the heck knows where. And then have the eyes on top, but then also have maybe a wolf-like thing. With the hippos is maybe they had sparse hair, so more like a pig if you've ever seen a pig. Most pigs
are... Well, you know, hold on. Let me get back into the stats here.
Okay, let's go.
Size, 4.5 to 6.5 feet / 1.5 to 2 meters long. I couldn't seem to find anything on the weight, but I'm assuming it's probably a couple hundred pounds.
Probably, yeah.
Diet carnivore, primarily fish and other small animals. So even though it was like a wolf, it didn't like hunt in packs and bring down like bigger animals, as far as we know.
We are guessing behavior on a bunch of bones.
Time, early Eocene, 50 to 48 million years ago. So this is like, we're talking about like how quick mammals evolved into whales. So this was like 15 to 17 million years after, or I guess 16 to 18 million years after the dinosaurs died out. So,
okay. And of course, with the dinosaurs came the large marine reptiles vanished.
Yeah, like the mosasaurs, yeah. So
mosasaurs as well as Ziphactanus.
Yep. A few elasmosaurians were still left. There were no ichthyosaurs left. They died in the early Cretaceous.
Wait, there were some elasmosaurians?
Like elasmosaurs, like plesiosaurs.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought they were one of the blanket extinctions at the end.
Oh, no,
the
ichthyosaurs died, but the plesiosaurs, they lasted till the end, I believe. So, hold on, let me double check them. I'm fairly sure, because Elasmosaurus was Elasmosaurus was at the very end.
Yeah, okay, so you're meaning to the end of the Cretaceous. Okay.
Yes, that's what I mean.
I thought you said they lived past the Cretaceous, and I'm like...
Oh, no. Like, okay, so... No.
You let's not feed the Nessie supporters.
No, it's real. It's real. Actually, no, here's the thing that's like the Nessie supporters. We don't know if any of the marine reptiles were actually freshwater anyways, so...
Pachycetus probably freshwater? Or...
Yeah, I'd say so. Brachiosaurus swamps. I said, Pakistan. Described 1981. Pop culture appearances. Somewhere in Jurassic World, the game, I'm sure. But
true.
That joke hasn't changed in the last 200 episodes that you've been...
No, that one has not changed.
Okay, so here's a few evolutionary features that Pachycetus had that make it seem like that even though it looks like kind of a wolf thing, it doesn't look too aquatic. It had a lot of features that helped it with an aquatic sort of environment. So it had a thickened skull bone, which is specialized for underwater hearing. It's called the auditory bulla.
Okay.
And sort of like how we were talking about how whales don't really have ears. So there's like a fat pack. There's like a bit of the lower jaw that has like a place to store fat that extends towards the ear bone, which are both associated with underwater hearing.
Okay. I wonder if in later cetaceans that was what evolved into the melon, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I've heard it's called the melon, so...
Yeah,
like,
on later cetaceans that have become their echolocation, but...
Yeah, like...
That's probably one of the early predecessors, though that's going to have to shift to the top of the skull, have to basically do a whole bunch of modifications in order to facilitate echolocation, which is a really powerful
ability. Which I doubt this thing had.
This is way too early. If this thing had the body plan and what it looked like, I mean, yes, it probably hears better in the water than we do, but no echolocation.
No, exactly. Now, here's the thing, though. It does have a small mandibular foramen, which is something based on that... description, I assume, is something to do with the teeth and jaws. Other cetaceans have much larger ones. Terrestrial animals have smaller ones. So once more, this is an intermediate fossil. Which, to be fair, every fossil is an intermediate fossil. We're all evolving into something else.
Theoretically, everything's an intermediate fossil. But, okay, so it is basically starting to develop a better hearing underwater, which I'm a little surprised about, because I would think that underwater sight and the closest analog smell would be more important. But
oh no, hearing underwater, like this whale songs, they'll go for miles.
Yeah,
miles.
That was
sound
that was
carries
basically,
so far.
I always thought underwater. That that was more of a not so much as an evolutionary advantage, basically more of a communication once the echolocation and everything really started to get going. But focusing on hearing when you spend most of your time.
Oh, it's probably, well, I mean, like, it's not really hearing so much as vibrations. It's kind of like touch.
Also,
I guess it's also kind of like hearing in that regard. But sort of like, especially if you're like an underwater predator, it might be useful to be able to sense when a fish is swimming away, you know, that's but it's kind of close if you're still or whatever.
Okay.
So here's a couple of things that like in that show that like while it might be aquatic, there's some things that make it not aquatic. The nose is at the tip of the snout. That's not usually how it is in water mammals. That's land mammals.
That
so,
is land mammals.
Because if you look at crocodiles, their nostrils
on their
are
top.
Pointed very much upwards. So.
Oh.
So and. If you look, obviously, the blowhole of a whale is their nostrils.
Their nostrils, which has done a rather dramatic shift from the normal location, shifting from the front of the snout where most mammals have it, all the way to, like, the top of the head.
Well, it's kind of like it's kind of like how we used to think Brachiosaurus was. Like,
okay.
Because remember with that big sort of crest on their head? Like, in Jurassic Park, I think it's depicted as the nostrils being there, but now I think it's more closer to the snout.
Okay, so and that would basically be like a resonating chamber or something?
Yeah, or something. I remember a detail I had in my Megazoic books, because Quinn, the Alpha Commander of the Voyager Corps, she was a Parasaurolophus, and I mentioned that she was a Parasaurolophus, so it was like she mentioned her crest that had connected to the resonating chamber, the nasal chamber, whatever. And that meant that, well, at her striking appearance, it did mean that when she got angry, she could yell really loud.
Yeah.
Just like
and she probably sounded very distinct when she was loud.
Parasaurolophus is one of the animals that we know exactly how it sounded like based on the studies of the resonating chamber. So,
yeah, very distinct resonating chamber. Okay,
Jurassic Park 3 all over again. But yeah, so Pachycetus, was it more on land or more on water? I'd wager it was mostly on land, but was very comfortable in the water, kind of like let's say a polar bear, like.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, because...
Or like a bear in general, I guess I should say, maybe.
I think polar bears are probably a more favorable one, because most bears are... Well, if they're going to be going in the water, they're probably, you know, going to stay mostly on land, whereas polar bears have to live... Oh, actually, here's a better comparison. Instead of going ursine, let's go... pantherine. Apparently, tigers are fairly adept swimmers.
Oh, that's true, they do love water. Yeah, that makes
pretty
that
adept
makes
swimmers,
sense.
And I don't know tigers if they have ever eat anything in the water as opposed to bears, so maybe my comparison is not as good, but they were very comfortable land or water.
Yeah, tigers don't really use water. They don't really use water for stealth, though. They use their bushes and their stripes, though.
Yeah.
So, which but to be fair, we have no idea if this had stripes or not. We don't have any fur impressions.
The appearance is distinct. I mean, some people say maybe it looked more like a wolf, or it's covered in fur, or more like an otter. Otters are covered in fur, but they are also fairly streamlined and are pretty adept swimmers. Or maybe it was
more like
pigs or hippos, where they don't got much fur.
Well, it's like if you look at like a seal, for instance, if you look at it, it looks naked. But if you actually see any videos of like handlers with them at aquariums, that's not naked. If you push against it, it's fur. It's matted fur. Like, oh.
Okay.
So I think hippos are naked mostly. But no, I think seals, I wonder if like seals. But like seals, though, it's like, that's thick fur they have that's matted. Oh, my goodness. Before we rate Pachycetus 1 out of 65 million, I remember there was like this really cool little flash. Well, it's not flash anymore because flash is nothing anymore. But it's like an online thing where it's like shows the depths. You get to scroll down to see the depths of the different zones, the different animals that live there. And then also, as well as certain animals, the deepest that they've gone.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was really shocked. Someone shared on like Facebook or whatever was like, wait, elephant seals can go 2 miles deep?
Wow.
And And then, because, like, that's the death of the elephant seal? Like, mad props, elephant seals. And then someone was like, oh, yeah, no, they can. There was a footage. There was some footage someone was having of, in they were in their deep-sea submersible, these scientists. They were looking at the camera outside. Of course, the only light is from their camera. They're looking around. They're looking at crabs and other stuff. And then suddenly, because, you know, seals are kind of closely related to dogs, a seal that they didn't expect just put its big, fat elephant nose to the camera. It's like, oh, what's this? Hello. Can you help me search for clams? And the scientists were just... At first, they were shocked and scared because they, the glowing eyes of the seal. But then suddenly, they just burst out laughing.
Yes. That is cool.
Dumb-looking seal. He's like, oh, hello.
Now, what seals are you doing are, now, seals are entirely separate from cetaceans, right?
Yes, because okay. Seals are, like I said, they're closely related to dogs. They're like...
dogs, okay.
They're carnivora. Like, so the group of carnivora that includes... Mm-hmm. And there's the caniforma and the feliforma. Caniformas include, obviously, dogs, but also mustelids and bears
seals?
And other stuff. But they also
and
include
bears?
Seals. So.
Okay. So...
So...
Yeah, actually, I think that might support the idea of perhaps they were more hairless because whales are completely okay. Hairless. Hippos are hairless. Pigs are...
And if this
okay,
is related to both,
hair,
then yeah.
They ain't got much.
Yeah, it's true. So, this is more related to both. I could see it if it had hair. It was very short hair. Like
either short hair or very sparse, stringy hair sort of thing.
Okay. Because, like, okay. Yeah, especially... It depends on how much it was in the water. If it was in the water too much, I could see it having more hair. But if you have, if it's in the water a lot, like if you have that hair, it has to either be specialized for the water or just gets in the way and creates drag. So,
yeah, definitely.
So, all right, let's rate Pachycetus 1 out of 65 million. I'm going to rate it 52 million. I think it's cool. It's cool that whales started from such humble beginnings.
Such small beginnings. It's like, yeah, this is about the size of a dog. And from that lineage... Blue
oh,
whales.
Like a big dog. Some of them are like 6 feet long. So like,
well, they also got a long. They've also got a long tail. But
that's true. I guess that's true. So yeah, never mind.
A lot
dogs
of its
don't
tail.
Have that long of a tail.
Yeah,
yeah so
I
guess the body
I would agree
size
with you, though. I do have to dock maybe about 10 million points because they kind of are a little indecisive. They are not totally sure what they're doing. Their eyes are on the top of their head, but their nostrils
Pick
are on the front.
One or the
of
other,
snout.
Pachycetus.
Are they aquatic? Are they? Are they terrestrial? They're just kind of this indecisive thing, though.
Well, they
did
decide eventually,
as
we all know. But
besides the lack of large things besides sharks in the waters, what do you think drove Pachycetus to think, let's go into the water? No, I am
assuming it's just the lack of it's just because like any evolution never has a path. It just takes whatever opportunities okay. are there, and then certain animals with certain mutations that can better fit to be, live in them. They're like, okay, this will work. And yet, I think it was just a lack of you know other animals that like it like first it was good to help it hunt, like especially if it was hunting more like a crocodile or other stuff. And then it was hunting fish, and then it just kept staying in the water more and more because the less it was in. On land, the less it would get eaten on land, and mm-hmm. so the more it would survive. So,
what kind of predators would there have been in this time and location? Maybe?
Okay, let's find out here. Let's see. It was found. Okay, so it looks like the only things that we fossil Eocene complete cetaceans. Pachycetus, Ambulocetus, which we'll talk about in a second, and Atacocetus. Well, that sounds cool. It's like Atacocetus with an O instead of an A. Well, like that second A. It's still huh. A-T-T-O, Atacocetus. Yeah, so, that's weird why it doesn't show other animals that were here. Okay, with some sort of stem perissodactyl, which are like the odd-toed ungulates. It looks like kind of like a tapir horse thing.
Okay, so potentially prey for Pachycetus, if it was more
if it ate that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Intermediate Million species like these are... It's really hard to nail down the behavior because...
Right. Okay, look, this isn't helpful. Animals in Caldera Formation. Pachycetus, Pachycetus, Ambulocetus, Pachycetus. I'm trying!
Come on, give us something else, because...
Okay, so for all we know, this place just had Pachycetus and the Anthracubin, which is the stem perissodactyl. So,
okay.
There we go.
Well,
those are the only two animals
map,
in its environment.
One look at the map, and it looks like, now I can't guess accurately, but looks like perhaps one of the reasons that there's so few other species is because that section of Pakistan was kind of underwater. at least a large portion
kind
of
underwater.
Of it is,
I thought you could say underwater,
underwater
was like a be political way, like under war.
Yeah, but yeah, during that time, during the Eoprian or the early Eocene, looks like it was most. It had a lot of coastline and water involved, especially since, you know, India hasn't hit yet, so
well,
a lot of the mountain formation hasn't occurred yet.
This was when, like, the ice caps still hadn't quite formed yet. They didn't form until the very end of the Eocene. So the sea levels were a lot higher than they are now. And what's more, actually, this time, it was actually way hotter than it was even in the Cretaceous. So
potentially, the Pachycetus went into the water, or the Pachycetus ancestor went into the water because it was too bloody hot. It was way too hot out there. It's like, let's go into the water, cool down.
Probably not, because it looks like ocean acidification was one of the reasons for the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum. But it does coincide, though. So maybe the ocean acidification killed off whatever competition was left.
That would definitely draw them into the ocean. Plenty of fish and little to no competition. Probably couldn't go too far out, otherwise into the sea. Otherwise, the sharks would definitely enjoy.
Yeah, the sharks were still the sharks were having their brief moment to shine. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this week. If you want to get a hold of the show, you can contact me at MattD@MatthewDonCreator.com. For your general questions to any of the co-hosts, you can find me on social media at MatthewDonCreator on Facebook, at MatthewDon64 on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. And also, if you want to follow the show, though, you can follow it PaleBytesPodcast@gmail.com. PaleBytesPod on Twitter and Paleobites Podcast on Instagram. And if you want to find Alan, just contact me and I'll relay any questions about D&D you inevitably probably have.
Yeah, I'm dead to social media. Totally dead.
Good for you. You've avoided the curse. So, all right. I have a book series on Amazon, Megazoic, available for print and Kindle. Obviously, no Pachycetus. It was way after when it took place. So, but that's it for this week. I say the end of every episode of Paleo Bites. I feel like this would make like a crocodile like growl, like.
I don't even know if you could hear it, but it's kind of this snarly sound in the back of the throat. Yeah,
you'd feel it more than hear it. Oh, that sounds
scary. Yeah.
All right, bye.
Bye.